announcing the What is RevOps Handbook, the only guide you will need to learn how to accelerate your sales cycle, improve win rates, and create a predictable revenue model. Learn how to establish a revenue operations team, grow a revenue machine, and how to measure success, all within the What is RevOps Handbook. Head to evster.com/what-is-revops or click the link in the description below to grab your copy today. This is Sales Ops Demystified, the number one most downloaded podcast in sales operations. We invite the brightest minds in sales ops onto the show to deconstruct the what, why, and how behind rep productivity, forecasting, metrics, and all things revenue. This podcast is brought to you by EBSTA, a revenue intelligence platform used to identify risk in the pipeline and score customer engagement, and is sponsored by the Global Sales Operations Association and the UK Revenue Operations Network. Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. Today, we're joined by someone who has a rich, diverse background pre-joining Sales Ops, yet still has, well, Sales and RevOps, I should say, yet still has a number of years experience in the space and also seems to be so young. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Appreciate the invite. I'm glad to be here and I'll hopefully contribute to your audience's learning.
So we're currently head of revenue and growth operations, and we're definitely going to dig into what we believe the difference is between those two at Upkeep. But before this, actually before your previous businesses, you have experience in finance and consulting. I would like to ask how that experience has aided you in the sales slash RevOps world.
I think it's a great question. At the time, you know, when I worked in those careers, I couldn't have foreseen that I'd be in RevOps, you know, 10 years later. But I started my career at Accenture, which is a management consulting firm primarily focused on solving business problems. And I worked in their technology division, primarily supporting the media and entertainment studios. We built custom marketing software and platforms back before there was cloud software. Almost everything was on-prem through EDI as opposed to API. I think what helped me there in that career were a couple things. One is how to be customer-centric in working in a customer-facing environment. As a consultant, you're working as a knowledge worker, providing, you know, intellectual capital to some interesting problems that these enterprises are working to solve. The second part is really just documentation to an extreme. So change management, providing requirement documentation. If you think about the phases of any implementation, they start off with, what's the business problem you're trying to solve? What are those requirements? Can we then build functional specifications that are signed off, go through technical specifications, go through a build and or a configuration of the turnkey system, deployment, and really providing change management and ongoing support. All things that RevOps do today. So it was really, really critical. The second career that I was in is FP&A. So after I received my MBA from the University of Michigan, I went to work at Intel and over at Google. At Intel, I was an intern for their Intel Capitals, their internal VC group. That was an interesting experience. And we're really working through investing in companies or finding M&As or mergers, really developing some VCs with my management partners. And then at Google, I supported the sales organization. So it all sort of came full circle. There, I was responsible for supporting their enterprise group. Now, instead of their ads and, you know, what they're most famous for, we sold as a horizontal sales channel across different vertical product lines. So Chromebooks, Google Apps, Google Maps, Cloud. And at the time, I really didn't really appreciate what it would lead to, but I specialized in a couple of things, territories, incentive design, quotas, unit economics, forecasting, budgeting, So all those things really came to come to define, you know, at least a great starting point for me in sales ops.
And so I assume the passion or enjoyment for those parts of the Google role drove you into the next two roles, which is where you actually started to specialize in sales ops.
Well, so what got me interested in sales ops was that before finance and before business school, I actually was in sales myself. I was a successful talent acquisition kind of recruiting partner, and I was a failed commercial real estate sales rep. So experienced boom and bust in sales. And so when I landed back in sales finance, I came to appreciate what my sales operations partners were doing. Oftentimes, finance and sales ops work together on a lot of different projects, from commissions to planning to capacity modeling. All those pieces, those requirements that the sales team and the finance team need in order to have a convincing and great plan for board and the investors. And so I appreciated what they did. I came to see that they were much closer to the customer than I was in a finance role. And so I took great interest in learning a lot more about what sales operations was doing. And it led me down this path of figuring out, is this something for me? And eventually I made the decision to make the move to a sales ops role.
So it actually all makes sense, doesn't it? The background in consulting, finance, and sales all colliding together. Now, the first, what I believe to be the first delegated sales ops role at a company called Vizier, if I'm not pronouncing that right, you took headcount from 150 reps to 450 reps, I believe.
That's total overall employee headcount, actually.
Okay. So that's for, not sales reps, but employee headcount. So I assume the sales rep count scaled in a similar fashion, right? So 3x. Or interestingly, was that lower, with the multiple of increase for reps lower or higher than the average for the business?
So revenue, when the time I came in and the time I entered, revenue multiplied by 7x. And the headcount was commensurately, I think, increased by 2.5 or 3x.
Got it. Cool.
Yeah. We expanded the different types of roles too by then. Originally we had solution consultants, sales, sales reps or account executives, SDRs, who were primarily on an outbound basis. And then we expanded that to inbound LDRs or lead development reps. We started moving to channel. So we had some channel partners that we were working with, and we started to introduce the customer account management role, which was selling to existing customers. So a whole new host of populations.
Sure. What do you think the core role that sales ops played, your sales ops function played in that growth? And I know it's quite a nebulous, non-specific question, but do you kind of see what I'm trying to get at? I'm trying to understand that if there was either a less effective or no sales ops team in the business during that growth period, what would have happened? What would have been different?
I think it's a very interesting question. We use that very same tactic in our sales motion itself. So we say, you have maintenance and reliability needs. I work at a company that sells maintenance software. We ask why upkeep, why now? It actually portends to a question of, what are you trying to solve for? And specifically, why are we the vendor of choice? You can also say, why sales ops? Why now? I'd say a couple of things. When I first came into Vizier, I was a first-time sales ops kind of professional. So I was really a novice. I brought a whole host of analytical and planning and finance skills. I didn't really have the Salesforce background, the technology that a lot of my sales ops peers started with. So I started from a different angle of the spectrum. And so what I provided there and what the business needed at that time was really insight into their productivity, their ramp, their forecasting, because they were selling an enterprise product to buyers who did not necessarily have a seat at the table nor an earnest budget to acquire a tool like Vizier or platform. And so the analysis that I brought in the door was really diving deeply into our sales motion itself, really getting to know what our ICP was and getting a sense for what the top of the funnel should look like, and then cascading that all the way down to our close wins. And so what that provided to us was the ability to capacity plan, to allocate resources, to identify how can we shorten the amount of time it takes to ramp sales reps, and gave us the confidence to go out and say, this is our recruiting plan. This is our training plan. These are the number of heads. This is where they're going to sit. This is going to be what territories they own, what accounts they have. And here's the expected productivity level that we could have from that. And so that allowed us to grow beyond the 10 million ARR mark, all the way up to, you know, past 50. And so it helped tremendously, because at the time we were still identifying what is our ICP, what is our messaging, what hits, what doesn't. And when we would launch new products every year, and then we'd have to go through that same exercise all over again.
Do you think it does sit with sales ops to really refine the ICP?
I think it's a partnership. I don't think any one person owns it, but I do think it's a collective. I think it sits between product, marketing, and sales. Sales ops can obviously be in prime position to bring in data to the conversation. And whenever you have data that, you know, you can mine, you can refine and find some insights through, that kind of informs the conversation.
Yeah, the reason I ask is that it is one of the most crucial things that a B2B commercial organization has to do. And I think that was definitely the right answer, in that it shouldn't just be one a department or one individual that defines that. It is a collaboration and sales ops. Like, the individual reps like have the data in their heads, but maybe they're not. Yeah, it should be the sales ops role or the sales lead role to kind of pull that from the reps, take that to the discussions with marketing or with product. So totally agree. Now, next I want to switch on to your technical skills. Now, I'm on your LinkedIn profile and I can see that you are a Salesforce admin and also have some certification around Tableau. At what point in your career was this pre-sales ops or post kind of moving sales ops that you got these? And how crucial do you think it is for someone in sales ops to have that kind of skill set?
So I've always had a penchant for you know, leaning into technology. I think going back in the high school, I would learn how to write HTML code on blogs, Blogger, for example. When I was in commercial real estate, I didn't earn a salary. Actually, it was a 100% commission role, so I had to find a way to provide income for myself. And so I would install open source software. I don't post this on my LinkedIn, but at the time I learned Magento. Magento is an e-commerce shopping cart, and WordPress, and Sugar CRM. So I would work with local nonprofits, offer my services, and if it worked well, they would pay me. If it didn't work well, they didn't have to owe me anything. So I learned to just how to put files upload into an FTP server, and just kind of really got technical there. In finance, you're going to be an Excel wonk, right? You know, everyone works in spreadsheets. When I worked at Google, I left the world of Excel and moved towards Google Sheets. The query function is probably the most powerful thing that's out there. And at Google, I taught SQL classes for my fellow finance peers. That was a really fun experience, really learning what SQL is all about, because there's a whole host of data that we open sourced internally. You just had to learn how to mine that data, and having those SQL skills was extremely powerful. I learned Python later on. I realized I was working a lot of hours that with a lot of repetitive tasks. And so Python was a way for me to automate some of those tasks, shrink what took 5 hours down to 5 minutes, and allowed me that breadth of additional time to spend on the strategic questions in the business. Salesforce came later. In fact, my first sales ops job, I was not a Salesforce admin. I was the director of sales ops. And so we had a Salesforce developer, and I had to learn. The way I learned the guts of Salesforce was actually through mining the data through an API call through Python, and then learning how all the different quote-unquote objects related to each other. And then designing those requirements using my experience from Accenture, my very first job, into this is what we want to do. Here's how we want to do it in terms of the technical specs. And then throwing that over the fence to my Salesforce developer, who would then provide feedback back to me and says, that won't work for this and this and that reason. So it took me, you know, a couple of months, actually, of trial and error, building a relationship with this developer, that I actually de facto learned Salesforce as well. And then I went off and went to San Francisco to take a an admin cert as well. And that was what cemented my experience in administration. And then over the years, I've just been consulting on the side on top of my full-time job. If I have any bandwidth at all, there I'll provide more Salesforce administration type consulting. And so why do I think it's important? I think depending on your level, if you're getting into sales ops, I think it's critically important that you know, especially if you're a Series A, Series B company where you don't have the luxury of having a dedicated person, you're going to have to roll up your sleeves and do a lot of things yourselves. Working your sandbox testing environment before you change set anything over in the production. You always want to test these things. I think it's critically important you have the skills. As you move up in your career, you're not necessarily the one doing the administration, or if the company's larger, your scope of your role probably becomes much more narrow. And so the technical skills may not be what you hang your hat on, but I do think having an understanding and being able to speak the same language as your technical peers, because your stakeholders, your sales leaders, or your marketing leaders are going to ask you some really interesting, complex business questions, but they don't really care about the technical details. You have to be that translation layer, that liaison with your technical audience. So I think it's critically important that you have an ability to at least be fluent in two different languages, business and technical.
For a Salesforce person listening that is not currently fluent technically, where would you suggest they start?
Depends on which camp you're in. The two big CRMs out there are HubSpot and Salesforce. So if you're in the HubSpot camp, I'd go immediately go to HubSpot Academy. If you're in the Salesforce camp, go to Salesforce Trailhead and don't sleep for a couple of weeks. You learn your best, and I guarantee you, anyone who's in sales ops listening to this, they do their best work after 6 p.m.
Got it. So going back to the working timeline of Jeff, post-Vizier, there was patient pop, but then post-patient pop, this was the first role where you shifted to revenue operations. Was the revenue operations role formed before you joined, or did you join and then decide to formulate this kind of almost combined operation post-joining?
So Upkeep is in an interesting position, right? Let's go back a little bit. So Vizier, sales ops, but partnering very heavily with marketing operations. One of my great peers and someone I respect very much so today still, Richard Wasilinichek, that's a crazy last name, but he also tangentially taught me a lot of marketing operations. So top of the funnel, really working through ABM, really mining through top of the funnel, steel threading all the way to the sales funnel. And then at Patient Pop, I was head of the channel operations group. So I'm selling indirectly through a reseller program. I was actually a lead deal registration referral program, eventually moving on to adding resellers. And so at Patient Pop, I led the entire sales ops group, and we partnered quite a bit with marketing ops as well. There was only one resource there. And so at Upkeep, give credit to Upkeep, right? It's a young company, it's on the rise, has some great investors, and I think a great message. And so they saw early on that in order to be successful, they wanted to have an integrated handoff, customer experience from marketing to sales to customer success. Because if you're a customer, you really almost don't care if you're talking to someone in marketing or sales or customer success, because in their mind, they're just thinking, I need to solve a problem. I need to acquire a solution. I need to learn how to use this solution and then evangelize and have it adopted throughout my organization. And if you look at that language, they're totally different from marketing, sales, and CS. We think very much about the business internally, that we get locked into, okay, now it's in this funnel, now it's moving to the sales funnel, and now it's moving to our customer success, implementation and customer success teams. When you start thinking about the customer, you start thinking about, naturally, I think revenue operations is going to come into the picture.
That's such a good way of explaining it. It's driven by the customer. The customer doesn't care if you're speaking to a rep, a CS rep, or someone in marketing. Can you explain the difference between revenue and growth operations?
So it's actually, I just think it's a long-winded title. There's a couple of things, right? So if you think about growth hacking or digital growth managers, that's primarily focused on developing growth strategies. So campaigns, really thinking through how are those going to impact the funnel. revenue, you know, I think is a misnomer personally. I actually think it's, you know, value operations, because you're trying to extract value, provide value from the customer and to the customer. Revenue is a lagging indicator, but we all get what it really means, right? It's really working, partnering, and serving the go-to-market leaders. For most companies, it's going to be your head of marketing, your head of sales, your head of customer success. And in some organizations, you're partnering and working with your finance team as well. So it's a miasma of what it could be for any organization. But revenue operations, you know, quite frankly, a lot of folks are in sales operations jobs today, and they're doing revenue operations. They just don't have the label.
Totally agree. Now, I have two questions left, and we're going to have to do them quite fast. The first is coming back to your role today, and specifically something that often sales leaders or even company leadership will push down to the sales or marketing team. That they'll ask, why are we not rated higher than XY competitor on Capterra, on G2Crowd, on Gartner? You guys are rated number one. Any quick tips on how somebody in revenue or sales ops can kind of help facilitate that for their business?
So that's a great thing about, you know, partnering with your customers, right? Earning that customer love. So you can build programs, but at the end of the day, it really falls under your customer engagement experiences. So CS and your product marketing teams. Not everyone's always going to review you. So asking for folks to review you in earnest and with candor is critically important. So you just have to simply ask and make it part of your process when you're going through your customer engagement or your health scores. Just talk to them. Say, hey, would you mind giving us a rating on G2 or Capterra? Same thing. We find those channels to be critically important for our success, and they're great partners.
Sure. A final question. Who in the world of sales or RevOps would you like to take for lunch?
Wow. So there's a lot of peers. There are many peers that I enjoy talking to. On LinkedIn, I'd say Rosalyn Santelena, someone I correspond with all the time. I love to grab lunch with her. I haven't met her in person actually as well. Hillary Headley over at Zoom. She's also part of the Emergent Capital portfolio family of companies. She's, I think, gone through a tremendous journey. You know, Zoom 10x overnight with the pandemic. I can't even imagine what her and her team are going through. So I would love to pick her brain on that whole experience as well.
Yeah, we really do need to try and get Hillary onto the show. She has been recommended by a couple of people, and it would be a fascinating story. Jeff, I want to thank you for coming on and sharing two or three really impactful points. I loved the way you described the trend or drive towards revenue operations being coming from the customer. I also loved the way you, or your point about sales ops needing to speak, obviously the business language, you would expect that, but then also translate to the technical language. And I do totally agree that either the HubSpot or the Salesforce sales ops people should be starting work at 6 p.m. as they go to Trailhead or HubSpot Academy. So Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Tom, appreciate the time, and I'll be tuning in.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. If you are listening on a podcast listening application, then please subscribe, rate, and review. And if you have any questions about the show, if you know a guest, or if you have any questions about sales operations, just hit me up at tomhunt@ebster.com. That's tomhunt@ebster.com.